This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
Hi, everyone. It's Liev, and I am reporting live from the biggest compost pile on Earth. And you're listening to the ProEquineGrooms.com episode of Horses in the Morning. We're at number 2168 in terms of episodes. And you should be listening to us on April 25th. This episode is brought to you by my most favorite companies ever, and I just put them all into one big wheelbarrow, and you'll probably understand that reference later. Shapley's Superior Equine Grooming Products. Definitely use these when you need to shine in the show ring, or even if you don't need to shine in the show ring and you just want to shine everywhere else. Also brought to you by Zero Egg Count. This is an amazing, basically poop test by mail. We'll talk about that a little bit later as well. Green Guard Equine Grazing Muzzles. These are a better design for a happier horse and also a much slimmer and safer horse. And the best grooming tool that's ever been made, the unicorn and rainbow of grooming tools, the hands-on grooming gloves, redefining the way that you groom and bond with your horse.
Coming up, topic-wise on today's show, we're going to take another stab at laminitis, yes, again, and then we're going to dig into what's real about research and the bunk you need to look out for, because there's plenty of that out there, and then we all get the scoop on everything poop, because us horse folks are obsessed by it. So stay tuned for the fray, folks. Dun, dun, dun. Leave.
Yes.
You've got some special offers from us. You open the show each month. You're here.
Yep.
On the fourth Thursday of each month, and you open it up with all kinds of amazing and interesting offers for folks because they need to invest in products and or services to make their horse life better. What are they?
Well, yeah, you're exactly right. These are just to make your horse's life better and more comfortable and healthier, and probably they're going to save you a little bit of time and money in the long run. So first offer, Green Guard grazing muzzles. These are the most amazing grazing muzzles. And if you caught me last month, you listened to me probably explain way too long about how they remind me of the plastic strawberry pint containers. Anyway, hopefully I won't go, down that rabbit hole again this week. We'll see. They have a special code. It's 15 Pro Equine, and it's good for 15% off all of their muzzles. You can either get that on their website or through Amazon, and that's good for a month. Hands on Gloves has free shipping when you purchase their gloves from their website with code PEG. And our new friends over at Zero Egg Count are giving us 15% off a fecal egg count test with code 15PEG. Now, that's a lot of PEGs. It's a lot of 15s for everybody. Don't worry. It's going to be in the show notes. Don't panic.
You can just head on over to horsesinthemorning.com and look for episode 2168 or the episode for April 25th, 2019. And to get on with the meat of our show, we've got a guest today. And anybody who loves to read equestrian blogs or equine blogs online will be familiar with this name. Who do we got coming up?
Well, we've got Fran Yerga from The Hoof Blog. And let me tell you, if there was ever a person that had the same train of thought as I do in terms of naming things with obvious titles, it's Fran. The Hoof Blog can be found at hoofblog.com. And she's somebody that came across my radar probably a good decade ago. I just started like the deep dive into horse ownership, which basically is like diving off the deep end and not knowing if there's, you know, water in the pool. And I've always been fascinated with hooves, and her website is just this cornucopia of amazing hoof care research and new discoveries and history lessons and art and science. And it's just a feast for all of your senses. And so I'm going to pick her brain about lots of things related to not only just hooves, but also research and how to be an informed skeptic when you are coming across something that you see on the internet, like a tweet, new cure for laminitis. I'm going to teach you guys, and with Fran's help, how to like kind of wade through all of the poop, if you will, about research and science to get to what's actually meaningful and important. Fran is here. She is, again, the purveyor of hoofblog.com. She also has a new product, Hoof Search, and we're going to talk about that later. But first, I want to know what sort of trends that, Fran, have you noticed in hoof care research over the years? What have you been seeing?
Well, it's been a lot of years, hasn't it? But yes, I have seen some very definite trends. And what I'm really excited about is that over the years we've had biomechanics research, you know, how the horse moves, how the hoof lands, how lame horses move, et cetera. And we've had medicine, for instance, with equine metabolic syndrome or Cushing's disease, studying it from the medical point of view. We've had the treatment side of the veterinary information research. And then we've had the farrier side of the actual mechanics of helping to support a horse. And now I'm finally seeing all those little threads come together and cross over. And it's really very exciting.
Is there, I know we talked briefly before we hit the record button. Is there something interesting you want to share with us about what's happened over the past like 100 years in terms of hoof care research? I think it's fascinating.
Well, I'm glad that you do, because one of the things that I've always done is I've always collected old veterinary journals, old books, old farrier books, and with the advent of the internet becoming so beautifully archived, I'm now able on the web to go back to any point in history that I want, and I've created these indexes, you know, decade by decade of hoof-related research. And the information that I have found in this, especially PhD theses from sort of the World War I era and before, are showing me a golden age of research, especially in Germany and to some extent in France, that we'll just, you know, the way I feel is that we're getting back to where they were 100 years ago. And it's really very exciting to be able to compare what they were doing and what we're finally getting back to doing, given that whole long dry stretch in the horse industry when the horse was supposedly all done and there wasn't any, you know, a lot of research going on. So this is a really exciting time that we're in now. Even that the hoof is being studied at all. You know, so much veterinary research is problem-based. You know, we have this disease, we need new treatments for this disease. But yet, the actual study of the foot itself was neglected for a very long time.
I'm really interested to, especially with your resources that you have and the things that you can dig up, because you are so in tune with the biomechanics of the hoof, and you share all of that information, which for me is, again, just as you mentioned, these little threads of different kind of categories of scientists coming together to study the hoof and laminitis in one big picture. And it's really fascinating to see that progress through your website and through all of your knowledge, which
I can tell you about one thing. I can remember when there's an Australian researcher, Dr. Chris Pollitt, And when he first took on the challenge of laminitis research, he basically stood up in front of the world and he said, I want to work on a solution for laminitis. However, I don't know how the normal foot functions. How can we address this incredible disease condition in the foot without understanding what normal is? And I think we're finally getting to the point now where people are putting priority on understanding the normal foot.
Right.
Rather than just trying to get to a solution so that we can help a lame horse, which of course is very, very important. But if we don't know what normal is, how do we do that?
Exactly. So basically you've just summed up this entire podcast about knowing normal, because it is really, it is really important. As you move through your days, uncovering research and talking with people and reading new studies and going back into time to read previous studies, what sort of surprising things or have you noticed about the people you interact with?
Well, there's one surprising thing, and it surprises me over and over and over every day, and that is how everyone will give me an interview and talk about the hoof or laminitis, however you want to put the hoof. Mm-hmm. I am just amazed when I'll call some really famous rider or trainer or something, and I think that I'm calling them for some really specific thing about a horse that is lame or is in competition now with a special shoe on or something, and they'll go back and tell me about horses that they've had in the past with laminitis and how heartbroken they were. And they will just give me time and give me their perspective on what the disease or what lameness has meant in their careers and in their lives with the horses that they love. And everyone has a story. Everyone has mm-hmm. a story. And it's so moving.
I think that underlying emotional connection to our horses and having that empathy towards their physical pain is kind of a very special glue that holds horse people together. Does that make sense?
So. Yeah, absolutely.
For those of us out there that are really interested in learning more about the research, past and present, and maybe even upcoming studies, what sort of resources can you recommend for us? And please feel free to talk about your hoof search, because it's such an incredible tool for those of us that really enjoy this type of learning.
Well, when it comes to resources, I'm pretty cautious when I'm talking with horse owners. There's a lot on the web. There's a lot on Facebook, links and things. And I sort of, as a journalist, this will sound odd, but I don't think that people should put too much store in a 700 word article that appears on the internet, because you almost have to go and read at least the abstract yourself, and
right.
if possible, read the entire paper. And I know I'm speaking for my journalist colleagues. What happens is that you're asked to write a condensation of a research study. That's difficult enough. But then once it leaves your hands, a really sensationalist headline might get added. I was thinking about, remember the one where beer cured laminitis and
Can do you one better. I can do you one better. We're going to talk about double cream here in a little bit. So
double cream. Yeah.
Yeah.
and then there was one where mint was going to erase laminitis pain and,
right.
Things
right.
like that. Well, those were not actual studies that were done. They're called what's called in vitro, where, it's in a laboratory. It's
right.
Or you can think of it, in the old days, we used to say test tube research. That kind
right.
of thing.
Right.
And also the other thing that people need to know, they need to be able to, first of all, the article has to say this was done in vitro, and then possibly explain what in vitro means, or should say that it was done on actual horses. And the other thing is that you can put a headline on a story and put it on Facebook and it will get a lot of clicks, which is what websites and publishers need. But in the PS, you have right. to say that it was a pilot study and there were only four horses.
Right.
And,
right.
The definition of a pilot study is doing something on a preliminary basis to see if it warrants a larger, more in-depth study.
Right.
So quite often what gets left out is that this is an in vitro study done basically, for want of a better word, in test tubes, or that it was a pilot study done on just a handful of horses.
Right.
And so, the other thing is sometimes the handful of horses were Shetland ponies or they were draft horses or something that, perhaps there would be with a more cross-section of horses, there may have, there may be an influence there. So I think people need to, sort of think about the fact that reports on research can be sensationalized and they can be inconclusive in that not all the information is given in the article, and you have to, and I wish that the magazines and the websites would include a link to the journal page.
Right.
So that people could read the abstract themselves.
So speaking about including links to journal pages, tell us about your hoof search project.
Okay. Well, I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah. Tell us.
Well, for years, I have just maintained a database of research, going back to the 1800s. And one day I was talking with some veterinarian friends and they said, well, what is the newest thing on treating canker? I can't remember what they asked. Maybe it was keratomas. But I said, oh, well, I can just look in my notes. And they said, your notes? And I said, yeah, well, this is all the stuff that came out last month. And they said, you're kidding. You have a list of what came out last month? We were thinking about the last year or something. And I said, no, this is what came out last month. And they said, could we just pay you? can we just subscribe to this?
Yes.
You send us this list every month. And I said, well, I guess I could do that.
Yeah.
So, what I started out doing for, a couple of my, really hoof heavy friends, I then decided to go public with it and offer it on a subscription basis. So it is 15 categories of equine lameness and hoof studies. And it starts with anatomy and goes all the way to zoo animals. And we look at all the new studies related to the hoof and to lameness, and give people the citation, the very basic, like 2-sentence summary,
right.
And then the link to actually go and see it themselves. And I can say that since I've started this, we've had a tremendous increase in what's called open access research.
Right.
So where formerly it was very difficult for people who didn't have university library access to be able to get through. To read the full paper. We now have an average about 50% of all the studies that I'm indexing are available on an open access basis so people can read the full paper.
Great. Awesome. And what's
and I also include, PhD theses, master's theses, conference proceedings that are done in peer-reviewed journals, and patents that come out.
Wow. And what's the website for that?
Well, that you can find it. It's offered on the Hoof blog.
Okay.
So what you do is you subscribe, and then every month you get sent a link to look at the new edition.
Awesome. What sort of laminitis trends are on your radar right now? Are you seeing a lot about obesity and EMS in the spring, or new treatments coming out?
Well, certainly. I mean, right now, for the past few months, laminitis has been the largest section on hoof search. Laminitis, of course, has its own section, its own chapter of hoof search.
Right.
And we're seeing, between 15 to 20 studies per month, but they are almost none of them have anything to actually do with the hoof. They're all on the mechanism of insulin resistance or some aspect of Cushing's disease.
Right.
So While those areas are definitely seeing an increase in research, the actual study of the foot, other than the mechanism of how insulin may directly or, in, well, rather indirectly, but affect what goes on in the foot, there isn't a lot of new research on treatment. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a lot going on in the field. I've just come back from a tremendous, tremendous conference in Kentucky at Rudin Riddle Equine Hospital. That was their first international equine podiatry conference. And I'm still kind of buzzing from it. It was so exciting to see all the new treatments and things. Absolutely, the trend is to both treat every single case as an individual case and not to try to find sort of a one-size-fits-all Band-Aid, you know, right, for all these horses. And then I had several people mentioning the effect of, you know, treating a horse, shoeing a horse, setting it up with whatever it needs, a special boot or a special shoe or whatever, but of monitoring it much more closely. We used to just go away for 6 weeks or whatever, but you know, there have been studies done that show how much a foot changes over the period between shoeings, and that we just need to be much more aware of that and, you know, really keep that in mind and be very mindful of the changes that happen over the period.
Knowing that's what it boils down to. Fran, thank you so much for spending some of your time and knowledge and resources. And I will be sure to link all of your amazing resources in the show notes for everybody. And so they have a way to contact you as well with all of their kudos and their questions. Thank you so much.
So Fran has this amazing new article on her website about overweight horses and how their weight can translate into risk of laminitis. And what these researchers have discovered, and they looked at 1,000 horses over several years, is that horses and ponies that have been allowed to gain weight are more than twice as likely to develop laminitis. Twice as likely. That's a huge increase. So one of the things that we have to be vigilant about as horse owners is knowing our horse is normal, hashtag normal. So we need to know, obviously, what their temperatures are, what their pulse and their respirations are on a normal resting basis. But we also need to know what our horses weigh, you know, and we don't have access to like giant rolling scales, and we certainly can't pick them up and step on a bathroom scale and do a little bit of subtraction to find out how much they weigh. So using a weight tape on a regular basis, you know, once a month, once every 6 weeks or something like that, can give you an idea of how your horses are maintaining or gaining or losing weight. Now, especially this time of year when we've got all sorts of like amazing grass coming out, even in places that don't typically get grass, you're going to have some growth of something on the earth. And that often leads to an increase not only in how much sugar your horse is eating, but also how much weight your horse can start to gain if you're not moderating his intake. So, for example, my horse gets a couple of hours a day on pasture in a muzzle because he's high risk. But I've also adjusted his regular forage to make up for that calorie count. Now, one of the things that's probably the easiest thing that you can do for a horse on pasture, especially in the spring, is to start to put them into a grazing muzzle. Jen, do you guys get grass down in Florida year round, or does it peak in the spring, or do you have high season, low season for grass?
We do have high season, low season. The native, I'm going to call them native grasses that grow here, tend to die out and become pretty brown in the winter.
Right.
Although if you plant winter grasses and then water it, we can very comfortably have grass year round here.
All right. So you top seed, you will have the option of top seeding for.
Yes. That's very much
that's
an option.
Kind of awesome. Yeah. So for me, with living in Virginia where it's like grass all day, every day, and especially with a high risk horse, and even if you don't have a high risk horse, but you know, he has a tendency to kind of puff out, get a little bit of a hay belly or maybe start to pack on some pounds, a grazing muzzle is going to reduce the chance that he's going to gain weight. He's going to, you know, have a smaller opportunity to gorge on all of those amazing sugars that can lead to laminitis, and you're just going to keep him at a healthier state. Now, I love the Green Guard grazing muzzles, the, you know, the strawberry pint baskets that we talked about last month. Now, I've got big breaking news, film at 11, about these. I bumped into them at Equine Affair last week. I was there with hands on gloves, and April was there with the Green Guard grazing muzzles, and they have brand new colors. So,
oh my gosh, colorful muzzles. That's awesome.
I know. Now, so I was thinking they were going to be like, so the original Green Guard grazing muzzle is black. And I was thinking they were going to make it like tan, you know, or something like kind of neutral or banana or cream colored. No, they went all out. It was straight up fuchsia.
Oh, that's like, awesome.
Straight up fuchsia.
What pony does not want to wear fuchsia?
Exactly.
It's universal.
Now, they also did themselves one better and made also lime green. So
wow. That's awesome.
They're beautiful. They're beautiful. Now, they've also redesigned the anti-Houdini halters to be much, much higher quality. They've got a leather breakaway crown piece, which is awesome. And that magic anti-Houdini strap that goes from the crown piece between the ears down their little beautiful faces and connects to the front of the grazing muzzle. That entire piece has now been sewn in so it doesn't slide side to side between the ears. They have a new, yeah, really smart. They've got a redesigned kind of throat latch area that will prevent those cheek pieces from kind of getting hooked under the jawline to make it a lot more comfortable for your horse. And ta-da, the halters are made in the U.S., which we
really
love. Yeah, super. Yep.
Awesome is that. Well, yep. It sounds like they're really listening to users of the product and trying to make it as useful and dependable as they possibly can. That's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. The halters are, of course, breakaway with that leather crown piece, which is of utmost importance, just so you don't get your horse into like a panic situation. And the muzzles with these amazing new colors, they're still just as effective. They have that amazing airflow. Your horse is allowed to eat within the square of the muzzle. He's not just stuck to one tiny little hole that over time gets bigger and bigger and bigger. He can vary where he puts his lips, you know, in the muzzle. And they're just so much more comfortable for their horses. They're not constrictive. They're not claustrophobic. And also, they're hot pink or lime green. So you'll be able to see from a distance just how adorable your horse looks with a little bit of like muzzle lipstick on in those amazing colors.
I'm just thinking to myself, the lime green one, if he's out on a particularly lush pasture, when he sticks his face down in it, you won't be able to see the muzzle.
Yes, but when he lifts his head up, he's going to look like he's had like, remember, you know, little kids when they have like a raspberry or blue lollipop,
how they cover their face with it.
Yeah. Their whole mouth turns like blue colored. Yeah, it's going to remind you of that. Anyway, they have that amazing offer code 15 Pro Equine for 15% off on their website and Amazon. And we thank them so much for sponsoring the podcast. I do have a really, really funny story about seeing them at Equine Affair in Ohio last weekend. So I've known April for a while and she's delightful and been a huge supporter of the company. One, because she's a woman, yes, and she owns the Green Guard distribution in US, which I think is absolutely fantastic. So I'm at the hands-on grooming booth at Equine Affair in Ohio, and a really nice lady comes to the booth and says, "Hi, I listened to your podcast."
Oh, neat.
And yes. I was like, but I didn't tell anybody I was going to be here. And she says, "My new friends over at the Green Guard grazing muzzle booth sent me over here." So Jennifer, if you're listening, shout out to you. Thank you for stopping by. Jennifer had gone to Green Guard and talked to them about the muzzles because she heard about them on this podcast. And then they sent her down to me to meet me in person. I got a picture with her. It was kind of fun. It was really humbling, actually. But maybe we can recreate that again next week. You and Glenn are going to be there. I'm going to be there. And Greengard's going to be there.
Everybody's going to be at Land Rover.
Yep. We're going to be at Land Rover. I'll be in the hands-on grooming gloves booth in the upper level of the indoor shopping area. April's down on the floor level. And I think you guys are down on the floor level too somewhere, aren't you?
Typically, we never know till we actually get there, but typically our recording area, I'm not going to call it a booth, but our recording area is actually in the grandstands of the old indoor arena. So where all the bleachers are.
Yeah.
We're usually actually in there where the announcer would normally sit during a horse show.
Oh, cool.
But we have a giant 15-foot tall banner. So you'll be able to spot us.
Yeah.
Now, we don't spend a whole lot of time in there. We are out and about and moving and getting stuff done and doing interviews. But if you want to get together with us, we do have a couple of meetups going on during Land Rover.
Oh, super. Yeah.
Yeah. One of those is at the New Vocations party, which I believe is Friday night. We're having a meetup there. So you can get together with us there. You can post That'd on our really Facebook fun. Page that you want to get together. Yeah. We're doing lots of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be actually really fun. And I would love for everybody just to come by and say hi. They listen to me on the podcast. I'm happy to answer questions. And just, it's so nice to like put names to ears. Does that make sense? Yeah,
that makes perfect sense. And Glenn just wrote me a quick little note, horseradionetwork.com/Kentucky. Sweet. Everything you need to know about what's going on at the Land Rover, Kentucky 3-day event. As far as Horse Radio Network is concerned. So you just go to horseradionetwork.com/Kentucky.
Awesome. Ta-ta. See everybody there next week. Yeah. All right. Cool. I'm so excited about next week, but we really need to focus on what's happening in the world of science and science-y things now.
Ooh, it's time to debunk some stuff, isn't it? I can hear it coming.
So we normally do equiscience, but today we're doing equibunk. But honestly, I'm thinking about calling it equipoop because literally this is the biggest load of hooey I've ever read in my entire life, passed off as quote unquote science. And I'll put a link in the show notes just so you can kind of like read through the whole thing and start to see just how, unorganized is a nice way to put this, just how unofficial this sort of presentation of information can be and how dangerous it can become when it starts to get passed around on social media. So I originally found this link on a tweet that said new cure for laminitis. And I'm thinking, why am I hearing about this on Twitter? And I'm not hearing about it from Fran or I don't know, New Bolton Center or other, beacons and meccas of laminitis information. And basically what this is, it is a case study of two horses. One is a pony, one is an adult, one is a full-size horse. The case study they followed these two creatures over 8 years. One was 15 years old, one was like 23 years old. And each time these two horses came down with laminitis, they gave the horses double cream, which is like a milk fat byproduct of like the dairy industry.
Double cream is about the texture of yogurt, but it tastes like cream. It's real sweet. It's almost butter.
Right.
Yeah.
So the conclusion of this paper was that yes, this double cream can help treat laminitis. Well, there's lots of problems with the way that this paper is presented. One, when you start to read the details of the subjects being the horse and the pony and the conditions that they were kept in and the circumstances around it, none of these things line out. There may or may not have been anti-inflammatory medication given to these horses at the same time that they were getting the clotted cream. They were not on similar diets. They were not bed on similar types of bedding. Sometimes they went out, sometimes they didn't go out, sometimes they were trotted, sometimes they weren't trotted. So it seems that there was no equal comparison.
Yeah. It sounds like it was not so much a case studies as this is the story of these two horses.
Yeah.
Because this case study intimates all of the things you just said that they didn't do, that there was some kind of protocol in order. There didn't seem to be a big protocol in order, besides the fact that they both got the milk product.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're very, very correct in saying that there was very, very little protocol. The other thing to think about is that, you know, case studies are an extremely important part of the scientific process, because a lot of research is done based on how veterinarians report things that they see in the field. A&M did a great study a few years ago collecting data from, you know, hundreds of veterinarians across the nation about how their clients are discovering laminitis and the prognosis and the steps that are going through in order to kind of understand how horse owners recognize and combat laminitis on the front lines. So in that situation, case studies and information gathering can be very valuable, but it gets dangerous when you have such a limited group of equines too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And nothing about them is the same. There's no controls there. So that's probably, for me, one of the most extreme things I've seen in terms of learning to be skeptical about things. You can't take two case studies that are so dissimilar and conclude that double cream cures laminitis.
Yeah, because but that seemed to be the only thing the two cases had in common.
Yeah, the only thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm on your page too. I'm going to put that one, I'm going to take my flex and fork and I'm going to chuck that into the old wheelbarrow along with the rest of the poo.
Yeah, now we understand why I call it equipoop.
Yeah.
Or equibunk.
Equibunk. There we go. And as Leave said, we will have a link to that in the show notes at horsesinthemorning.com for the April 25th, 2019 episode, if just in case you want to read how not to present a scientific paper.
Yes.
There we go. Perfect.
And so,
speaking of clotted cream.
Yes.
If you get a little too much clotted cream in your life, you're going to need to get into some fitness.
That is true. Although a little bit, you know what? You should treat yourself every now and again. I'm not saying no clotted cream, you know, but within reason. So, and I don't have a scientific study today for the fitness segment, simply because I'm just going to throw some stuff out there. It's super logical stuff. Thinking about springtime and getting into shape, and we've talked a lot in the past episodes about, like, you know, lollygagging around the pasture versus actively walking in hand. This is the same for us as, you know, walking around Target browsing versus putting on a backpack and hiking the hills in your neighborhood at an active pace. So we can kind of take opportunities around the barn to get more active and burn some calories and start to get into better shape, but also become equal side to side, because that helps us in the saddle when we can be more symmetrical as well. So my first tip is always groom with two hands. And if you find this to be really, really weird, groom with your off hand a little bit more than your dominant hand. And things over time will start to even out. And it does feel so strange to groom with your non-dominant hand, but it feels even more strange when you start to pick hooves with your non-dominant hands, because it it's just weird.
However,
the more you do it, the more you're going to get over that awkwardness, and the more it's going to help you in the saddle. You're going to have a lot more body awareness of where your hands are and your elbows and your shoulders, which obviously is going to help your horse. And when you are grooming with two hands, and by the way, I only use the hands-on grooming gloves because lifesaver, especially during shedding season, you're going to start to develop equal musculature in both of your arms, right? So everything starts to get easy. Now, when you have, you know, beginning to develop equal musculature in your arms, you're also going to reduce the risk of injuries, right? Because one arm's not doing all of the heavy lifting, literally and figuratively.
There you go.
So I'm going to go off on a little tangent, because that's what I do, about the grooming gloves. They do have that special offer, code PEG, on their website for free shipping. But when you groom with both hands, you have instant feedback about what's going on your horse. I mean, you know, you've used the gloves, right?
Use the glove. Glenn has a pair of gloves that he guards very closely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is interesting. If your horse has a sore spot or an itchy spot.
Right.
And something I find really useful because Nigel, I massage his muscles a lot. Whenever I groom Nigel, it's not because I want to make his coat prettier, but because I want to feel what his muscles are doing and how they're feeling and what I need to do to help loosen them up because he is very, very prone to knots all over.
Oh, yeah.
He's very knotty. And it's nice because the gloves do both. They allow me tactile feel of his muscles, but they get the grooming done at the same time versus a brush. It's two separate steps.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I like to treat myself every now and again with a little manicure. I want to keep it as clean as possible. I'm going to use the gloves, right?
That's one way to look at it. You're right.
Yeah. So basically this means I have to hurry up and get a manicure before I leave for Rolex because
now everybody's going to be expecting a certain level.
Everyone's going to come. Let me see your manicure. I will also say that the gloves have a brand new color. It's purple. And you know what? It just kind of really matches the new Green Guard fuchsia color. So well, there you go.
You can have a theme. Absolutely.
You can have a total theme. Mashy matchy can be fun.
Yeah, there we go.
Anyway, so when you can start grooming with your hands, you get that instant feedback of your horse, but you're also going to be able to tell which arm fatigues faster, which tells you which arm you need to work on, which will tell you when they start to be evenly strong, how much you've evened out. And I know this sounds really weird and nitpicky and strange, but the other thing that's going to help you do this is if you scoop your horse's poop with the opposite grip.
Oh, that's nearly impossible. Oh my gosh, is that hard?
I know. But
it's very, very hard.
Yep. It will help you in the saddle. And it seems small, but it all boils down to body awareness. And I've had enough big name trainers yell at me over the years for this, that, or the other with equitation. And it feels like I have good equitation, but it turns out that I don't. But the more you have body awareness, the more the equitation is going to be easily corrected and you're going to be more aware of it and become a more effective rider.
There you go. Well, yeah, that's there's no denying that.
The
evenness, because you're not only when you do these sorts of things for your fitness, it's fitness at every level. You're strengthening various and sundry muscle groups more equally. You are improving your body awareness or proprioception. You're helping to rewire your brain.
Yeah.
Because this is when you clean a stall or groom a horse, for many of us, it's literally automatic. You put zero amount of actual thought into doing what you're doing. It's a learned behavior. It's it's unconscious competence.
And absolutely.
So when you flip it around, you have to create new neural pathways. So it's good for you mentally, psychologically, emotionally, physically. It's the whole thing. This is perfect.
It is.
This is going to cure every equestrian's ill in the universe. You need to do a study on it, Leave.
I should do a study of it. Now, not a
two-person case
study. Yeah, I'm going to do it. Yeah. So the other thing is, while you're doing all of these things, you can give your horse the best scratches on his butt. That really is what it boils down to. So I have a really funny and slightly strange story for you. And most of you guys are now starting to get to know me. You haven't met my husband yet. And I like to say I'm the funny one, but the reality is he's the funny one. So I was prepping for this and getting my notes together and things like that. And I'm in my office. It's about like 8:30 last night. And he says to me, "What are you working on?" And I say, "I'm working on the podcast. I want to get things organized." And he says, "What's the topic?" And I said, "Well, we're going to talk about hooves again. And we're going to talk about poop. It's all about poop." And no kidding, with a straight face, he says to me, "I've texted you pictures of poop before, and it's never been weird." And I just thought to myself, this is why I married you. You're so amazing. Now, I'm going to put this in some context. When he is in charge of taking care of the horse, because I'm on a work trip or something like that, I will get text messages with horse poop to make sure that everything looks normal. But I just thought he was funny. He just had the perfect zinger for me talking about
the horse poop theme. So yay, Chris. Thanks, babe.
Props for him.
Yeah. Which brings me to some amazing Facebook group questions. I have that new Facebook group, Pro Equine Grooms group, again, with the very logical naming of things. And Marie was asking me, she says, let's talk poop. She even threw in the emoji, which I absolutely adore. What do you look for when you're mucking out? Number, wetness, shape. When doing a sample for a fecal egg count, how do I pick a nugget? Or little samples from many. What do you do if you notice a change in poop? Diarrhea. How do you do a SAM test? There's so much about poop. So I also have another question from Ava, says, let's talk about poop soup. Do you want your horse eating hay that's on top of wet soupy manure after the rain? How sick can they get? So we're going to talk about literally all of those things and also what to do when your horse uses his own poop as a pillow, because they do that, right?
They do.
Yeah, they do that.
All right. Which of these many, many topics on poop, subtopics are we going to tackle first?
I know. We're going to go big and then we're going to go small. Since I'm standing in the compost bin, we're going to talk about compost really quickly, because I want to dispel two sort of questions that people really have about compost that are quite common. One is, what happens to worm eggs, parasite eggs in compost? And what happens to dewormers in compost? Like, there's a lot of questionable information, again, going back to science versus not, about, is it safe to put like horse manure compost on your garden?
Not necessarily.
Well, yes, you're totally correct. If the compost is done correctly, you're totally fine. If you let it marinate and cook for an appropriate amount of time, you're going to be fine. And
but there's a caveat there,
which is
if you use certain weed killing products on your pastures that are designed to be safe for horses, it says right on the label, you may not use this in compost. You may not grow plants in it ever. Huh.
Oh, because of the weed killing property.
Because the residual stays in the manure. Yep. The horse eats the grass. It stays in the manure. So if you use anything on your pasture to fertilize or kill weeds, read the entire label, including the teensy weensy print.
Yes. Now, interesting idea about if you want to go really, really green on your farm and you have weeds that you need to be taken care of and you don't want to go that route, goats are really good about eating weeds and leaving the grass for your horses.
There you go. And goats are cute.
They are cute and they will headbutt you. And that's a whole other podcast episode.
We'll do a separate one on goats. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, if you're interested in composting, there's some understanding of, you know, a couple of really simple guidelines to use when you're starting to set up a compost system. Keep your compost system on higher ground, and you want to make sure it's away from any waterways like creeks and things like that, or drains.
You don't want a poo river. Bad.
No, you do not want a poo river. And honestly, maybe sometimes you're going to have a poo river, but you don't want the poo river to go into a water supply.
Yeah,
a real river. Like a creek or something like that. Right. Bins are a really good way to use manure to compost. And they don't have to be huge, huge bins. You can have successful composting even in the winter with 1 cubic meter bins. And that's not a big bin at all. Now, it's not going to be for a 10 horse operation, but if you have 1 or 2 horses, you might be able to get away with a 3-bin system where they're each 1 or 2 meters cubed. The reason you would use a bin is that you can use the bins to flip and rotate and aerate the manure from one to the other. So you put, as you're starting, you put the manure in the first bin that's the freshest stuff. After that bin is full, you flip it and rotate it into the second bin where it cooks a little bit more. Fill up the first one with the fresh stuff. Then when you need to make more space, the one in the middle that's been cooking gets to finish in the third bin. You see, you just kind of like you're filling and then moving slot to slot. By the time it cooks in the third bin, it's done, which is really nice. The other thing is, by the time it gets to the third bin, it's shrunk in size.
That's true. It does reduce in volume quite a bit as it
decreases. Does.
Yeah.
Which is really nice, because then you don't have to empty that third bin as often. You can keep putting the finished things into the bin. So the other thing to remember about compost is that it needs oxygen. And if you're turning your compost bin, you know, regularly, like once a week or so with a tractor or forks or whatever, you know, that's a pretty good schedule for turning to get things aerated and get some oxygen in there. You can also jab some giant pipes in there, like PVC pipes. Do you know what a French drain is? It's the PVC pipe that you use, like, from the downspouts coming off your house.
Yes, it's when you go to the home store, it's that white pipe that has holes in it. Like,
why do they have holes in it? Yes, that's what makes it French, I suppose, is the holes.
Like Swiss cheese. It should be Swiss drain.
It should be Swiss drains.
Yes.
So if you just stab your compost bin with a couple of those, that helps things aerate if you're not able to turn as often, or if the bins are so big that you can only turn with a tractor and it's just not fitting into your schedule. Unwieldy.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you need to add a little bit more heat, cover your compost bin. You want to keep things damp, but not wet. So if you live in an area that's really arid, like the desert or something like that, you know, with the dry heat, you definitely want to add a little bit of moisture to your compost bin to keep it damp, but not so, so wet.
Helpful hint here.
Yeah.
Barn hack. One of the things we used to do is every time we cleaned the stalls, you have to clean out the water buckets too. We poured the water buckets into the wheelbarrows and that went in the muck heap too.
Absolutely.
And especially in desert climates where, hello, not only is, you know, water is a valuable resource. You have to pay for it.
So that's
a handy way if you need to add water to your composting system, but you don't want to have to pay for extra water just to do that.
Pour
those water buckets right into your compost bin.
If you don't have the problem and you want to reuse the water somewhere else, we used to dump all of the water buckets into the wheelbarrow and roll it to like the vegetable patch or water the flowers with it.
Yep.
Or, you know, put it in the bird feeders or put it in the bird baths and things like that.
I use it to water the aisle way before I sweep it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Sorry. I digress. No. Squirrel.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, look, something shiny.
Yeah.
So, you know, things are good with your compost bin if you can achieve 140 degrees in temperature, and that's going to kill that's going to kill the worm eggs that are in there when you get to 140 degrees Fahrenheit. It's going to also kill any weed seeds. So
there you go.
Yeah, which is really nice because you don't want to carry the weeds from the pasture to the compost to your vegetable or flower beds.
Yeah, more thistles than tomatoes. That's bad.
Right. So we already know 140 degrees. Parasite eggs, they're done. They're fine. Not a problem. They're dead. Now, looking at ivermectin specifically, because it's a very, very common dewormer, depending on the heat of your compost bin, it's going to vary in how much time it takes to fully break down. So, for example, in the summer or in a hot compost bin, the half-life of ivermectin is going to be about 2 weeks. And the half-life means the amount of time it takes for a substance to be cut in half. So say you've got the equivalent of one tube of ivermectin in your compost bin. At max temperatures in the summer, after 2 weeks, you're going to have the equivalent of half a tube of ivermectin. And I'm literally pulling this tube analogy out of thin air. It doesn't
Yeah. It makes sense. Yeah.
Right.
But then you have half a tube left. In that same amount of time, you have a quarter of a tube left. In that same amount of time.
Right. Yeah.
It's the reverse of exponential, I think.
Absolutely. So in about, they're saying that, and Cornell is the one that did the study on this.
We'll they're put saying that, link that in the show notes.
Yep. They're saying about 175 days or so after ivermectin was given to your horse, there's going to be Zippo ivermectin in your compost bin.
There we go.
And honestly, that's about the life cycle of the compost. And, you know, for the most part, you're also talking about a teeny tiny amount of ivermectin compared to mountains of manure. It's so diluted in there, especially by the time you get to a couple of weeks later when it's been through a couple of half-life cycles. Anyway.
Yes.
So
good information to know, especially if you're putting the manure onto a vegetable garden or such. So by the time that manure is mature enough to be spread back out onto a field, you're going to be getting to be in pretty good shape. Yeah,
you're in great shape. Yeah. You're in great shape. Now, if you are like on some sort of like mission to create the fastest compost turnover in known to humans, and you want to like, you just need it really, really fast, and you have a way to scientifically do that, you need 5 days for the temperature to destroy the pathogens that are found in animal manure. And that includes the weed seeds. So, and don't be afraid to also toss your eggshells and your banana peels and your apple cores there. Just stay away from meats and oils going in your compost bin of horse manure.
There you go.
Yep. Yeah. So that's compost. Let's talk about some more poop related things. Let's talk about testing poop for different reasons.
Oh, did the poop have a chance to study for the test?
No.
Aww.
It's a pop quiz.
Pop quiz for the poop.
So one of the questions I received was about how to test your horse for sand. It's the sand test. This is a really easy thing that you can do. However, you need to understand that this only tells you one thing. And basically what this is if you want to find out if your horse has been eating sand and then passing it in his manure, you can actually test his fecal balls to see how much sand comes out of them. And it's really easy. All you need is like a big Ziploc bag or a long exam glove that your veterinarian would use for a rectal exam. You put a couple of fecal balls in there. You smush them around. You add however much water you want to add to make poop soup. And then you hang it on something, and any sand that's passing through your horse is going to collect at the bottom. Right?
You get fingers full of sand.
You can get fingers full of sand. However, this test is extremely inconclusive. For example, yes.
Well, like you said, it does tell you one thing. And what is that one thing?
It tells you if your horse ate sand and then pooped it.
That's what it tells you.
Right. It does not tell you how much sand may or may not be in your horse. It also... So let's just go through the scenarios. You do this sand test and you see that there's like a quarter of an inch of sand in one of the fingers of your glove after you've let the poop soup kind of marinate for a little bit. This tells you that your horse ate sand and that he pooped it. It doesn't tell you if there's anything left in his system. So he could have a boatload of sand in there and he's only getting rid of a little bit at a time. Or he's getting rid of all of it, or he's getting rid of half of it.
Just don't know.
You just don't know. Now, if you do the sand test and you see that there's no sand in your glove or your bag, this doesn't mean that your horse doesn't have sand in his belly. This just means nothing is passing out the other end. So he could be eating sand and it's not coming out, or he's not eating sand and there's nothing in there. So you need to get your vet involved. If you live in an especially sandy environment or your horse eats hay off the ground or the pasture's poor and he's doing a lot of nibbling of extremely short grass, that can oftentimes get a lot of soil and dirt into their systems. Your vet can...
If I may add here, if your horse gets turnout in an arena with footing...
Yes.
That I only, from experience... First and only time I've ever had to deal, knock on wood, with a sand colic. The horse got turned out in a arena that had footing in it. And unbeknownst to us, he was sucking up a reasonable amount of that and it was staying in there. So,
It's pretty yucky. Now, your vet can do x-rays for a definitive kind of diagnosis. In some horses, there's your vet might be able to hear something through a stethoscope in your horse's digestive system that might indicate sand. What you don't want to happen is your horse on the surgical table. So you can do the sand test. It gives you incomplete information. But also, maybe spend your time better looking at how your horse eats, the environment he eats in. It's inexpensive to put mats down in a pasture if that's where he eats. Like if he has, you know, scrubby pasture, and then they toss a few flakes of hay over the fence, put some mats down. Or you can rig something where, like, for example, where I board, the horses, they have big like feed troughs in their paddocks, and the hay nets are lashed into the field, into the feed troughs, so they can't get their horseshoes stuck on the nets, but they have the slow feeder that's contained where they are not eating hay off the earth. So
there you go.
Yeah, there's lots
when
of,
in, when in doubt, ask your veterinarian locally, because he's going to be familiar with your local soil conditions.
Absolutely.
The frequency of sand colics in your local area. Your local vet that knows you and your horses is a great resource.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Other poop tests that we can...
We're still testing poop?
We're still testing poop.
How many tests does it have to take?
Well, this is the interesting stuff. This is talking about testing for small strongyles and ascarids, which are also known as roundworms.
And now we're into worms. Ew.
Yeah. It gets really gross here for a while, guys. Okay. Hang with me.
Warning.
Yeah.
Warning. Yeah.
But also just fascinating. Like some of the life cycles of these worms that I'm going to tell you about, it's simply fascinating how this happens and how many stages of life cycle these crazy creatures have, considering how small they are. Well, some of them are small. So we'll talk about small strongyles and why they're so tricky and what this has to do with you've heard of like antibiotic resistance. Well, there's drug resistance too when it comes to dewormers. And it's kind of scary because there's not a whole lot of dewormers being developed right now. There's three classes currently being used, and some of them are showing signs of resistance. I partnered with Zero Egg Count, that, you know, poop testing my mail.
Yep.
And basically their service is conducting fecal egg counts for you. You can take a sample at your convenience, refrigerate it. They even send you the little ice pack to put in your mail sleeve. They even send you the mail sleeve, by the way. And you drop it in the mail, send it to them, and they will come back with your horse's fecal egg count, which is given to you in eggs per gram, which is how many eggs they found per gram of your horse's manure. They have the most amazing resources on their website in terms of information if you're really curious about diving deep into intestinal parasites in horses, you know, why fecal egg counts are really important, new guidelines that the vets are using in terms of they're really, really trying to convince people not to use rotational dewormers anymore because, one, it's a waste of money if you're deworming for something that your horse doesn't have. And also you're contributing to that resistance that these drugs are experiencing because the worms aren't being affected by them anymore. So kudos to Zero Egg Count for helping me out with this. The current AAEP guidelines, which is the American Association of Equine Practitioners, it's basically the horse vet club, so to speak, but professional. Professional organization. So they
it's the Elks Club for
it is. It is. You know, I want to make things professional, but I also want to make things like easy to understand. And I sometimes don't have the middle road on that. You know what I mean?
It's a tough balancing act. It's a very narrow line.
I do my best though. So AAEP is now saying that horse owners and veterinarians should be using evidence-based or selective dewormers. And that basically boils down to test before you treat. So it's springtime. It's the ideal time right now to be doing a fecal egg count on your horse because the grasses are starting to come up again. The eggs are starting to get, you know, viable due to temperatures inside your horse. They're like, hey, guess what? It's spring. Time to start laying eggs. So take your poop sample, put it in a little bag, send it to the labs, your egg count. They'll do the test for you, and you and your veterinarian and your egg count can come up with the best deworming protocol for your horse. Now, you can do that. Give your dewormer if needed, because we want to get to a place where the parasites are being controlled, not 100% eradicated, because that's just not possible with these levels of resistance that are happening. And then 2 weeks later, after you've given your dewormer, is when you want to come back and do the fecal egg count reduction test. It sounds like a fancy new test. It's the same one you did before you dewormed. It's just giving you the results of what work your dewormer did. So you test before to get your baseline, give the dewormer 2 weeks later, test again for the reduction test, and you'll see how effective that dewormer was.
So if your horse has worms, you dewormer as instructed and you test again.
Yes.
And the number of eggs found per gram,
yep,
should go down a certain percentage if the dewormer is doing what it's supposed to do.
Right. And you might find that you need to switch brands, which is obviously where your veterinarian is going to come in.
Yeah.
You know, and because these tests over mail are so convenient for you, you know, you don't have to schedule an appointment for your vet to come out, or you don't have to drive the poop sample or the fecal ball to a lab or to your vet's office to drop it off so the lab can pick it up from them. You literally can put it in your mailbox and put the flag up.
My apologies to rural post persons everywhere.
Well, luckily, okay, two things I'll say about this, because I have the fecal egg count kit in my possession. It's very nicely labeled. It doesn't scream there's poop in here. It's very professionally labeled. And it's also not a clear envelope. So even though it, you know, you can't, like, unless you have x-ray vision, you're not going to look in this envelope and be like, oh my God, there's poop in there. You just don't know. It's very, very incognito. So good design there for the postal service. Yeah. So let's talk about what the fecal egg count is looking for. It's looking for these the small strongyles and the ascarids, the roundworms. So I'll do the less interesting, and by interesting, I mean weird, barf-tastic type of worm first, and that's the small strongyles. These obviously live in your horse, but they have a kind of a different mechanism inside your horse. The eggs that are in your horse's pasture are eaten by your horse, accidentally, of course. If he had a way to sort them out, I'm pretty sure he wouldn't, but we're talking microscopic here, so they're just kind of can be ubiquitous. Your horse eats these larvae, actually. In the case of the strongyles, the eggs that are left by another horse's manure, or even your own horse's manure from a previous life cycle, turn into larvae in the pasture. Your horse eats the larvae, and the larvae migrate to the large intestine and the cecum, kind of like the back end of your horse's digestive system. And then they're like, hey, we like it here, but we don't like it as much as if we actually lived inside the intestinal wall. So they dig a hole in your horse's intestinal wall and they form a cyst. The problem with these cysts is that it's widely believed that dewormers cannot penetrate the cysts to kill these larvae that are in your horse's intestinal wall. Now, they hang out there in like this worm nest, if you will, for months, years, sometimes. And then when they decide they're done growing, they pop out of your horse's gut and they finish growing inside the gut. So they've left the wall, they're back in your gut. And that's when they start to lay eggs and start the life cycle again. The reason that these are sometimes fairly dangerous parasites for your horse to have is that if they all erupt from their little worm nests at the same time, they can wreak some real havoc on your horse. They can cause an inflammatory reaction leading to colitis. They can give your horse diarrhea. He can colic. If there's enough of them, they can create a blockage in your horse. So it's really kind of a yucky, yucky thing to have to think about. Now, if you do the fecal egg count in the spring, you're going to get an idea of, you know, what kind of eggs your horse has floating around. You want to deworm him, but you also want to test his fecal ball in the fall as well to know what his parasite load is going into winter. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, super. So literally vaccines twice a year, fecal egg count twice a year. Super easy. Right? I hope.
There you go.
Yeah. So those were kind of yucky. Let's talk about roundworms or the ascarids.
Aww.
I know. Just guess, how big can an ascarid or a roundworm get inside your horse?
Inches. Ew! Can it get that big?
Yeah. Did you read the notes? Are you cheating? Are you reading my show notes?
No, I don't know, but it's big enough that it will make you drop your pitchfork
and
take out your cell phone and call your vet, right?
Yeah. You're probably not going to see one pass in your horse's manure, but an adult ascarid or roundworm can be 12 to 15 inches long.
Ew.
Gross, right? That's just one. Now imagine if he had hundreds.
Ew.
Yeah. So when they're living in your horse's gut, they will actually steal nutrition and blood from your horse's gut. They can also create a worm blockade. Like, you know, beavers build dams.
These worms have that habit too. My gosh, it just goes on and on.
I know, it's really gross. So I keep saying it's really gross and I haven't even gotten to the gross part. It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. That's the new word I'm going to use. So your horse, he's in the paddock. He's munching away on all the salad. He's super, super happy. He accidentally eats some roundworm eggs in the pasture. When they land in his small intestine this time, they're going to hatch into larvae. Now, these larvae are like, hey, the small intestine is kind of nice, but guess what? I want to go on a road trip. So I'm going to road trip through this horse's intestines into his veins. And from there, I'm going to hang a left to go to his liver. And then, you know what? I want to see what else is going on up here. I'm going to go to his heart, but I find that I really want to live in his lungs. So the larvae end up in your horse's lungs.
Ew. Which,
yeah, yeah. And then they're like, well, I'm ready to do something else now. It's been cool in here in the lungs. So your horse is going to cough. And when your horse coughs, the larvae come up with his cough. And then your horse is like, oh, huh, I wonder if I'm getting a cold. He swallows, the larvae go back into his intestines where they mature into full-size adult worms and start to lay eggs of their own.
So they never have to leave the horse.
No, and that's what makes it extra barf-tastic because they literally, yeah.
Once they're in, they're in. So that is very different than other internal parasite species that at some point they have to leave the horse.
Yeah. Well, so these roundworms, they're going to live in your horse. Then the eggs are going to pass through your horse's maneuver to get picked up by him again or by another horse again and then find a new host.
Ew.
Yeah, ew is right. So anyway, that's the importance of doing these fecal egg counts is that you want to sort of get these numbers, again, under control and make sure that the entire herd on your property has similar egg counts so that they're not just passing the worms back and forth. If they share a pasture, like a game of ping pong, right?
Right. So like our discussion on sand in our horse's gut and doing the manure test, this poop test also tells us some things, but it doesn't tell us other. It doesn't technically tell us how many adult worms our horse is harboring inside of his body.
No.
But it does tell us the number of eggs coming out, which the veterinarian and the lab can then extrapolate if right. he's got this many coming out, he's probably got this many inside, and this is what we need to do about it.
Not really. So the fecal egg count, it categorizes horses into what kind of a shedder they are, low, medium, or high shedders. So depending on what scale you look at, you know, somewhere around 300 eggs per gram is considered low to medium shedders. And then maybe medium shedders are, you know, a little bit higher than that. And then you have the high shedders. It's the high shedders that you have to worry about, because those are the ones that are continually releasing more eggs into the environment. And you want to get those numbers down as well. Low shedders might not need deworming at all. You know, obviously you're going to have to think about your horse's overall health. Like, this is a high risk horse. He already has, you know, some other ailment, some other medical problem where we want to keep the load on his GI system as close to zero as possible. So if he's a low shedder, you might want to deworm him. But a young horse that's fit and healthy and, you know, going at the 2-star level, who's a low shedder, you might not need to give a dewormer to.
Like our sand test conversation. This is where exactly. having the your local veterinarian who knows you and the local conditions and your horse right. is really key, because all of those things you just said, just, okay, he's a low shedder, but let's look at his entire lifestyle. Right. Let's look yeah. at the big picture and decide whether or not this particular low shedder at this particular moment needs to be treated, because right. it's not a black and white answer.
It's not.
That you can just zing in a fecal egg count test and go, nope.
Right.
That's where having that your veterinarian, who is also up to date on all the latest research, not the bunk.
Right. We hope.
Yeah. Yes. Can help you out with that. That's a fascinating point of view in that.
Yeah.
Because there's all this stuff going around. Well, fecal egg counts don't tell you if there are tapeworms present, and fecal egg counts don't technically tell you how many worms are in there. But that's why it's part of the larger picture.
It is.
The poop picture is very, very large.
Oh my God. The poop picture is huge. So anyway, speaking of the poop picture, we're going to carry on, because there is a lot more poop to cover. yeah. Whew. We're knee deep in it, man. Jen, you and I, we're knee deep in it. Let's talk quickly. Well, first let me go back and really give a huge thank you to ZeroEggCount.com. for generously giving everybody this amazing discount. 15 PEG is the code. Again, show notes. And when you are collecting your fecal egg count sample to mail off, you want to pick one fecal ball from the top of the pile, because the top of the pile probably hasn't hit the dirt, and that might contaminate things. So you just want to find like the cleanest poop ball you can, if that's a thing. And use that one from the top of the pile to send in.
There we go.
So
now, does it have to be a brand new poop pile? How new does it have to be?
It needs to be fresh, but not warm and not frozen. The instructions.
Okay, so if it's dry on the outside, that's not fresh enough.
Yeah. You want to find the freshest one possible. So obviously, like, if you can watch your horse poop, but then you need to wait for it to like come back to like a normal temperature. And the directions are super, super easy to understand and crystal clear on, you know, you don't want to cook the poop and you don't want to freeze the poop as it's in transit, being incognito from the postal service because of smart packaging.
There we go.
Yep. So we're going to go back to our hashtag no normal, K-N-O-W normal.
Yep.
About how to read your horse's poop.
Okay.
This is just like vital signs. What is normal for your horse? And it's obviously going to vary from horse to horse, but the number, the size, the frequency, super important there, frequency, consistency, those are all things to notice and pay attention to over time. So you don't want to micromanage each poop and be like, oh my gosh, he's one fecal ball short of what he normally is. Like, big picture here, big trend, right?
Right.
Look for those big trends. Notice changes in shape, because as the fecal balls get smaller and harder, you might be headed towards an impaction, because that is telling you that the fecal balls are really dehydrated, because likely they've been in your horse's gut too long. So much water's been sucked out of them, which is what the gut does. And then they get small and hard and they're in there too long and they can back up. Then you have the opposite problem with too much water in the manure, and that's diarrhea, which can lead to dehydration, colitis, which is really gross, colic, laminitis, of course, because you know any sort of inflammatory reaction in your horse, like diarrhea, can lead to laminitis. And, you know, this is can be a long way down the road, but horses with chronic diarrhea or sudden intense diarrhea can have organ failure. So here's the other thing about diarrhea. It's also a sign that your horse has a very bad infection that can be transmitted to his horse buddies. So it's worth a call to your veterinarian and say, hey, I have diarrhea. Well, my horse has diarrhea, which is, it can be something to be alarmed about. Now, don't panic and freak out and like, you know, go off the deep end, but just know that any sort of a change, when that trend of consistency and size and number and frequency and texture starts to change, that's your horse telling you something. And again, let's look at the big picture. Did you just change his hay from one type to another? Did you get a new shipment of hay? Did he go to a show where he was stressed out on the trailer on the way home? Did he have a new medication? Sometimes that affects your GI system. Is he on a new supplement? Did you work him less or more than you normally do? Does he have an increase in stressors or a decrease in stressors? Big picture type stuff. But definitely keeping in mind his hydration and his vital signs, because vital signs plus his hydration. We talked about how to do the gum test on a previous episode where you just wipe your finger in between his upper gum and his row of teeth there and make sure it feels slimy, not sticky. If he's dehydrated, he's going to have digestive problems. And that's basically how to read your horse's poop.
There you go. No, that's something that I have kind of been, it's my thing. The first thing I do when I walk into the barn in the morning, if the horses have been in, is
yes.
Count the poops.
Yep. Absolutely.
You count the poops, and are the poops stirred around as yep. they normally are? Cause every horse has his level of stirring.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Stall. Right.
Yeah.
And
totally.
I think for a lot of folks, especially if you have a big barn where things have to happen in a hurry to get it all done, or if you have different people who clean the stalls every day, that can be missed so easily.
It can. Yeah. Now, it also goes hand in hand with how much your horse is drinking, which obviously is something to keep track of as well, because your horse's hydration and how much water he's getting will impact his manure. So speaking about hydration, if you're finding that you need to add more water to your horse somehow, and obviously we all know that whole phrase about you can lead a horse to water, et cetera, it's really easy to add water to your horse's meals. You can add, if he gets like a concentrated feed or a fortified feed or some sort of grain product, make it soup for him. A lot of horses really enjoy that. It also kind of slows them down. So if he bolts his food a lot, adding water can slow him down a little bit.
Yeah, it is harder to eat it when it's mushy.
Yeah. If you need to, you can soak his hay. That can add quite a bit of water to your horse's system. And make sure he's getting the correct amount of salt. I'm not a fan of salt blocks because you can't rely on a horse to adequately dose himself. And also there's a lot of and I haven't found science to prove this yet, but there's a lot of schools of thought out there that the salt blocks that are designed for cattle don't work well for horses because their tongues are so different, and the horse's tongues can get really irritated by using a block. Therefore, they're not going to use it enough.
Oh, interesting.
So
I have had a lot of horses over the years that rarely lick the blocks.
Right.
They like to chew them. They bite them off and crunch them up like hard candy.
Yeah, and then you're getting too much at one time. So,
yeah,
rule of thumb, 1 tablespoon of salt per 500 pounds of horse every day. Just top dress his meal with it. If he's sweating or you need extra electrolyte help, add your electrolyte on top of that. like the 1 tablespoon per 500 pounds, that's every single day for every horse. That's his basic like requirements. Mm-hmm. The electrolytes are if he's sweating and losing the other sort of minerals like calcium and magnesium and things like that, that need to get replaced.
Yeah.
So hopefully that covers all of the questions about knowing your horse is normal and poop things like that. But then we have this question about poop soup. Like what happens if your horse like likes to use his poop as a plate?
Yeah, that's a toughie. Ooh.
It is a toughie. And, you know, putting mats down to put hay on top of in a paddock or a pasture type situation is great to get a barrier between the sand and your horse, but not so great if your horse poops on them. So, and this goes back to just having a really nice, even homemade system, especially when you're dealing with rain. And a lot of horses that live outside, they get tossed hay outside. It's totally fine, but the hay gets wet and then it might get trampled and things like that. But if you can rig some sort of large feed trough outside, that's that solid, really thick plastic where you can drill some holes in the bottom of it for drainage and then put the hay in there, chances are he's not going to poop in that tub. And then you can put the hay in, he can eat from it, he's getting less sand, and he's not using his poop as a plate. You might have to get creative with like what sort of things you can find around your farm. Like, can you hang a muck tub with holes drained in the bottom of it for water drainage from the fence to feed his hay? You know, who knows? There's lots of stuff you can get creative with.
There you go. And it is tough whenever you have a horse that eats out of doors and the hay has to be out of doors. And then you get into that rainy cycle where it's just,
it's soup.
Every hoof print is filled with water and it's really hard, especially if you are not in control of how it gets put out.
Yeah, you absolutely. Know,
it's very difficult. And it's a good point because if the horse is living in a lot situation where the manure and the footing tend to get mixed together, you know, there are going to be potentially parasite eggs in that soupy mess that he's standing in.
Oh, totally.
So if the hay gets in it, there's a good chance that the eggs are going to be on that hay. Not to mention other potential risks if he's eating
poop soup.
There's a lot of potential for things to go wrong there.
But not only that, it's just really yucky.
It's really yucky.
So the other problem with poop is that some horses use it as a plate. Some horses use it as a pillow.
Horse uses it a pillow. I'm correcting you. Every horse.
Every
uses
horse.
It a pillow. So sometimes it's a butt pillow. Sometimes it's a shoulder pillow.
Yeah. And it's usually always the night before a show pillow. Like if they're ever going to decide to use poop as a pillow, it's right before like the big clinic or the big show or your, you know, rated show debut or whatever. So solution time. And I've used this, I don't know. It seems like for decades, it's Shapley's Easy Out. It is their no rinse shampoo. It is light purple. It smells fantastic. And you don't have to do anything except for curry or use your grooming gloves to get the top layer of the stain off.
The crusty bits.
Get the crusty bits off. Spray the stain with some Easy Out. And I like to use the spray setting instead of the stream setting. I like it to like mist over. And then I like go and do a chore. I like take his temperature or I pick his feet or I do his mane. And then I'll come back with a dry rag and I buff it out. Poof, stain gone. And I have a gray, like stain.
You know your stains. Yeah.
Yes. Now, the bonus of Easy Out is it's a deodorizer as well. So,
your pony won't smell like poo pillow.
Yes. And what happens when your pony doesn't smell like poo pillow is that some of the flies have a harder time finding him because flies love poop.
Yes, they do.
Yes. So the other thing that you can use, the other thing with Easy Out, it has optical brighteners in it. And that's just a fancy way of saying your horse is going to be really ridiculously shiny and the other horses will be jealous. if it's time to do like a major like pre-show bath, or it's just that time for spa day, you can also use the Equitone whitening shampoo. It's purple, but it won't stain your hands purple for some reason, because again, it has magic in it. It's also by Shapley's. And even though it's purple, you can use it on all colors because it has that stain removing, good for all colors. And it has the optical brighteners in it. And it's just awesome. So there you have it. There, everything you could know about poop from the inside to the outside. Nicely said.
Literally.
Yes. Literally from the inside to the outside.
So that's kind of all things poop for today. From the yes. from the horse to the ground to the wheelbarrow to the muck heap to the poop pillow and everything along the way. And if you want to find out more, or you want to appropriately stalk professional equine grooms, where can they do that online?
Oh, you can totally creep on me. I totally appreciate that. The best way to find me is to hit up that new Pro Equine Grooms group on Facebook, or find me at Pinterest, which is pinterest.com/proequinegrooms, and jam on all my fancy boards there. And you can also find me in the show notes. Like, this is going to be jam packed show notes this week.
Yeah, huge. We have a lot of really good links in here. Yeah.
Yeah. Huge show notes.
Huge show notes. And you're going to find all of that at horsesinthemorning.com. If you go about a third of the way down the page, and I'm assuming you're listening to this podcast somewhere near April 25th, 2019. If you're listening in April of 2025, the website may have changed since then. But if you go to about a third of the way down, you'll see that there's a little icon for Professional Equine Grooms Podcasts. If you click that button, it brings them all up and it makes them easy to find.
Sweet.
Yes.
And you can have also, when this airs, we're in Kentucky. Please come find me. It's going to be fun.
Yes. If you're at the Kentucky Horse Park at the Land Rover Kentucky 3-day event, come see us all. Yeah.
And I will gladly ask for your autograph. I think that would be fun.
There we go. You can find all of the Horse Radio Network shows at horseradionetwork.com. And if you put horseradionetwork.com/Kentucky, you'll find everything that you need to know about the 2019 version of the Land Rover Kentucky 3-day event. You can listen via your favorite podcatcher. You can listen via iTunes, and you can listen via your phone, either Android or iPhone, via our app. Our app is in your app store. Search Horse Radio Network. It's free and easy to use. And no, we don't try to sell you things in the app. And who are we thanking in a big, big way for today's show, Leave?
Basically, literally everybody. Shapley's, who I've worked with since like minute one when I launched my website. They are such huge supporters of grooms and horse owners everywhere. Truly amazing products. Small US-based company. Wonderful people, and you can absolutely hashtag shine with Shapley's. Then our newest sponsor, Zero Egg Counts. Eliminate the guesswork about what is going into your horse. Save money, make appropriate choices in your horse's deworming program. Of course, the Green Guard Equine Grazing Muzzles. These are fantastic and will help your horse avoid a higher laminitis risk. Super important. Better design, happier horses. And hands-on grooming gloves, redefining the way you groom. Wax on, wax off. Equal arm strength. Your horse will love all the butt scratches. And shedding season is vastly upon us. Take matters into your own hands. Thank you so much.
All right. Ooh. Thanks for hanging out with me, Leave. And we will see you next month on the fourth Thursday.
Yes, May. Woohoo! Thank you, guys.